Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. We're back.
We are back. We did miss last night. I had some health issues, so I apologize, everyone, but we did manage to dodge the baby for one more week, or one more day, so we were able to record tonight. So welcome, everybody.
Fate.
Thanks for joining us. Yeah, I know, I tempted fate. Yeah, Ash is going to run in any second.
No, we should be good. She's out there doing squats, doing laps around the house. I don't think that will have
any impact
on this show going a full hour. I've told her just, you know, do what you got to do, because you don't want to make jokes with someone who's due in 2 days. It's just not a good idea.
So, Ryan will probably not be with us next week. He's hopefully, crossed fingers, going to have a brand new baby to be taken care of. So he's taking next week off. So we're going to do all of our Gamescom coverage next week with a TBD guest, so I'm really excited to cover everything that's been going on this week. As far as I know, the conference is still going for another couple of days, so it should be good times. We've already seen some really cool stuff coming out of there. In particular, obviously, I am totally biased, but there's some really awesome Blizzard shorts that have been coming out of Gamescom. So we saw one for Overwatch, we saw one for Hearthstone.
Frozen 2, that was good.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm looking forward to really kind of diving into everything that we saw at Gamescom this week. But until then, we have a few games to talk about. So, Ryan, you have more than me this week, so I'm going to start off with you because I want to hear about Horizon. Again, okay. I don't even care. I could talk about Horizon every podcast for the rest of the year, and that would be fine.
It might end up being the case because, honestly, if we look at the pace of that I'm playing this game, I could probably bring it up once a week alongside all the other major releases. So, folks, don't worry. This is one of those rare occurrences where I get a pass to talk about the same game each week.
And, oh, absolutely. Yeah, 100%. I'm good. Just like, yeah, bring it. Do it.
Horizon, once again, fantastic game. Sorry it took this long, everybody. Sorry it took this long, Jocelyn. You deserve a separate apology.
I was going to say, all you have to say is, Jocelyn, you were right. And then we can move on.
Wait a minute. What were you right about? Just so I know what I'm...
How amazing the game is.
Okay, perfect. That's fine.
And, you know, everything else.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe we were like, getting into a Zelda Horizon conversation again. But no, Horizon's a great game.
I'm still right there, too.
Sure. Well, I hate the fact that I can't climb everything in Horizon. It's the worst thing about the game.
Yeah, that is one thing that took a little bit of getting used to, is that there are actually, like, paths and barriers in Horizon. Yeah. And when I played it specifically, I had also just played Zelda. So I was, like, trying to climb cliffs, and it, like, wasn't letting me. And I was like, what the F is going on?
You just look weird as you, like, hop against, like, a ledge. And I get it. It's part of the puzzle, but... inevitably, it had me just turning around and going doing something else, as opposed to trying to find the one little crevice I could walk up. But that being said, you know, that aside, last week we talked about the fact that I haven't felt I hit that, like, story beat that was really solving the mystery that's present,
right?
Which is the post, why was there an apocalypse in the first place, and how has humanity survived that apocalypse and continued to I would hesitate to say thrive, but I believe they're doing all right. They're doing okay. Mm-hmm. Right after that episode, you had suggested go do the next story mission and you'll get what you're looking for. And I did. And yeah, fantastic. That story beat is amazing. I love that they start to explain. They don't just treat what caused the apocalypse as this mysterious, like, ooh, you're never going to find out. You're just going to have to play around it. And it's, you know, I'm watching The Leftovers on HBO, and that's exactly what they're doing. They're playing around that mystery. And, like, I'm the kind of guy who liked Lost and then watched it all the way through and then realized, like, man, they're not going to give us any answers, those bums. Where's the polar bear from? They gave us that one.
They gave us the polar bear one.
Yeah. Not the smoke monster.
They didn't really explain the smoke monster very well.
Lindelof, man. In this show or movie or game or whatever I'm watching, I can't even tell anymore. In Horizon, they flat out start to explain what happened and why it happened. And, you know, the game's been out for a while, so it's a bit of a spoiler. So I don't know, should we spoil it or not? Like, just the little
piece? Okay. Dude, do it.
So we're gonna spoil
it. It has been out for a while, so we're gonna spoil a little bit of Horizon. So
Now, I want, guys. Yeah, spoilers incoming, but I do want to say that everybody was super nice not to spoil this game for me. Even if they had told me this little tidbit, I wouldn't have been that upset because it would have actually had me playing faster and more. It's basically the fact that they create these war machines, which we all knew was what humanity was doing. They create these war machines.
Peacekeeping robots, Ryan, come on.
Peacekeeping robots that can refuel from biomass. And there's a great story where one of the codename robots got a hold of a pod of dolphins and turned them into pink mush for fuel. And people are like, those things are extinct. What the hell are you doing? And the fact that the robots can self-produce. So that coupled with...
Well, that was the thing. Yeah, there was some kind of like virus or something that kind of... Because those were all supposed to be contingency things, like if they were in a remote area and you know came under combat and ran out of fuel, like then their systems to feed on biomass as fuel was supposed to kick in, and their ability to self reproduce and create more machines was again supposed to be these like fail safes. Mm-hmm. But they got activated.
Yeah, there's a bad line of code or something. I haven't gotten far enough where I don't know if they, and I don't need them to explain everything. Like if you
find all the audio logs and if you find a lot of like the little tidbits, like the newspapers and flyers and things like that, they could find around the world, then they do explain almost everything. Yeah. About like the timeline of what happened, and like there's a lot of like emails back and forth between like different people, and the further you get, because you've done basically the big huge tower climb, right?
I did the tower climb, and right now I'm about to go into the Eclipse's evil base to do something. I can't remember now, but I had just destroyed like a receiver on a tall neck that was moved through a base. And, like, you basically cause a big explosion. You have to run out, which was very Uncharted of that game. It was very cool. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, no, I think the story...
Okay, yeah, I know where you are. You're basically at the point in the story where I thought I was at the end. Because when you go into that base, it's going to tell you, like, make sure you save and do what you want to do and blah-de-blah-de-blah. So this is the point in the story where I stopped following the main storyline and started doing all of everything else. And then went back to the main story and I was only like, you're probably like halfway through. Okay. So, yeah.
And that's good.
Heads up. Yeah, don't think you're at the end. You're not even close. There's much more to the story.
And I am like blasting through levels now, like unlocking a lot of powers and stuff. Just having a great time with the game. Tearing monsters apart, found this new weapon called like the Terra Blaster or something, and it's basically a shotgun that just erodes parts off of monsters and instantly takes the robot's health like to half. That coupled with whatever they're weak against has been a really good combo for me, and I'm just I'm a killing machine. It's kind of amazing. And you know, like all of these games, Rise of the Tomb Raider, Horizon, those are the two that pop into my head. You felt like the tools were in front of you. You just had to earn them. And then once you do, you're just this badass. And that's where I'm at in Horizon, where I'm officially a badass. And I'm enjoying... Until they introduce
you to the next monsters.
Sure. There was... I was playing today. I'm in the desert. And they introduced the sand turtles that have just... I haven't even gone near them. They just started spitting rocks at me. And I'm like, nope.
Yep.
I'm leaving this lovely place and finding the tall neck. But then I ran into some other chumps and just tore them apart. No problem. Like, I've basically gotten to the point where I can take on... pretty much anything. But the game's a lot of fun and the story is really cool, and I want to keep progressing because I think that the world that they've set up and the world that came before this world is also very interesting in the fact that, you know, you have Project Zero Dawn, you have Mission Unending Eternity or something, and the reason for, you know, one complementing the other is actually really cool as well, and very sad and kind of you know, seems like a waste, but you know, if it works, and you know, something must work,
went right. Yeah,
exactly. And the fact that, you know, that's sort of the driving force for Aloy to go forward, to kind of figure out what's going on and why it worked and how they can stop the monsters again that are being resurrected by these Eclipse people, it's going to be interesting to see. And the fact that the main baddie seems to be this like rogue AI of some kind, or so far it's got a great story. And honestly, it's one of those things that it's so different. So that's why it kind of plays to what I'm looking for in a video game, because, you know, Tomb Raider is one thing where the gameplay was really nice, but the story was not that different. Mm-hmm. You know, it was humans doing human stuff.
Yeah, that was one thing that I found in Horizon, was it was a new kind of story for me. Like, mm-hmm. it was something I hadn't really seen before, and a lot of the clues and things, information that you find about what happened in, like, to cause the apocalypse feels very, like, first of all, it takes place within our lifetimes, basically. So it's very relatable, because they kind of, like, tied things that happened in the early 2000s into events through about 2050 or 2060. I can't remember the exact date. I think it was 2050 something. Mm-hmm. So it's very relatable in that you can kind of look at what happened and go, oh, I can totally see that. Like, yep, I can see that too. Yeah, that's totally a decision that would be made. Like, and all the way along to get to the point of these peacekeeping robots, like, you can see the natural progression, or what feels like natural progression. It's very based in, like, current events,
yeah,
which was cool, but also a little bit scary. But that's kind of, like, my favorite sci-fi, almost, like, near-future sci-fi, because I find, like, sometimes it's things like, you know, Star Trek is really hard to wrap your head around, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's so many things that are so far away from what we actually have, like, capabilities as a, you know, species. But when you can, like, see the story from where we are now and progress through, like, logically in steps of a few years, like, you can see, like, okay, well, you know, this company was founded, and then they did this thing happened, and then this was the response. And you're just like, oh, yeah, like, I can logically see that progression. Like, that makes sense to me. So this is my favorite kind of sci-fi. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, the story just gets more and more interesting as you progress. And, like, even if they had stopped and not said anything else past that tower scene, like, past all that information, like, that would have been enough. But there's so much more to it. And I can't wait. I feel like we should almost do, like, another spoiler. Yeah. Like, I know we've already done a full-on spoiler cast for Horizon. But, I can't wait to fully, like, talk to you about it.
I think
if it's off air.
Yeah, no, I think what we would do with Horizon, you know, we could easily talk about it each week, because I am going to keep playing it, so I don't kind of lose that muscle memory of being this badass boss, whatever. I think that when the expansion comes out, we both know I won't be able to play it as fast as you, but, you know, we should do a spoiler. I think it's key that we do a spoiler thing there, and we can certainly do another Horizon. I feel like Horizon would have been a great game for inside the game, you know, like our concept for focusing in on a story. Mm-hmm. And honestly, we probably would have done that if both of us had played right at the very beginning.
Yeah, you didn't totally drop the ball.
Yeah, that old Zelda thing, you know. it was one of those scenarios where you have these two great games coming out at the same time, and then one host picks one, the other host picks the other, and they latch on to each other, and it's away you go. But I'm
glad that you've gotten as far as you have, and I'm glad that you're still enjoying it and playing more. So I can't wait to just rip into it once you get through the whole story, because, man, dude, it's so good.
I think by then, well, you know, pending, you know, the incoming new baby, you're probably looking at next week being a wash, but maybe hopefully for the week I return to the show, we'll be able to talk more about it and see where I'm at. But I did want to say, though, like, I find that the main missions where you're doing the story stuff with the robots and, you know, learning about what happened in the past, that's where the game shines. Mm-hmm. Some of the side stuff where you're interacting with the people of the current world, not so great, kind of bland in comparison. Some of them are, but
some of them definitely are.
Yeah. But, like, I did like not a lot of them.
Yeah. They didn't, kind of repeat the same sort of story over and over for the side quests, which I thought was good. But yeah, some of them were a little bit, like, you can see why you would stop to help them, but at the same time, you're just kind of like, eh. And that's, I find, more like the errands than the actual, like, side quests, because I think there's, like, four major storylines that are the, like, side quests. And then there's, like, around 20, like, errand sort of things that are these, like, little mini storylines, and those can seem like they're a little bit blah. But there's, like, usually pretty much there's, like, one, there's one story with, like, the Hunter's Lodge in the main city. There's one story with the, I can't remember all the names of the tribes now, but the, like, the one, the big guys like to drink that are, like, the iron workers.
Osirum,
yeah. There's a storyline with them. And yeah, then there's a storyline down in the city with the refugees, which is the city, I think, that you're heading to now.
Okay.
So...
So I like
Osirum, that city. I think there's, oh, and then the one with your original tribe that I thought was the main storyline that turned out to not be the main storyline. So yeah, there's kind of those four side stories that are really good. And then, yeah, as they get more and more kind of like minor, then, you know, the story kind of peters out, but you don't have to do all of those.
No.
If you do all of the, not the, the side quests, but the errand ones, like I said, there's about 20 of them. The more of those you do, the cooler the end of the game gets. I'll just say that.
That's interesting, because the and, you know, when I say some of the, you know, the main, the, you know, the current world characters are, is kind of bland, it's because there, you're right, there are some key ones that are really interesting that explore what the world is, and then there are other ones that are kind of just like, go do this thing and then some things will happen. They're not like collect quests or kill quests. Those are obviously, like, I know they're meant to be bland, they're tutorials, they're this or that, but really what I'm looking at are, there's a couple of quests that are, that shine right through, like the main Osirum quest, like the Sun King and protecting against this other dude who's weird, and then a couple others. But there are some ones in the middle there that you don't necessarily have to do. And that's kind of where I'm at, is it's just like, I read the quest text and I say, well, this doesn't sound interesting, so I'm going to move on from this one. As anybody should in video games, you know, having limited time, they put a lot of fluff in there so that...
Yeah, and like I said, I think I ended up around level 50. I hit level cap anyways, whatever that level cap happens to be. And I still had more stuff to do. And I think the highest the main quest, like, level recommended was like maybe 30. So I mean, like, you definitely did not have to do all of the stuff that I did.
Right, like right now I'm like 33. So like I'm pretty, I'm like,
so you basically already out leveled the main storyline.
Okay,
basically. Interesting.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna keep, I think I'm gonna pile through the main storyline, because I have kind of done everything on the side that I want to do. So I'm kind of at that point where I have to open up the next set of quests.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm excited to hear what you have to say after you hear the whole story of the apocalypse and everything else and figure out what happened. But, cool. I thought it was really, really well done, but that's not a surprise to anyone who's been listening to this podcast. So,
no.
Let's move on. I only got a little bit of game time this week, but what I used it on was Uncharted Lost Legacy. I think I'm probably like 2 hours in now. I think I'm on chapter 4 or chapter 5. And I've got to say, like, I was pleasantly surprised, I guess, other than the whole like sticker shock when I went to buy it. So I thought Uncharted Lost Legacy was like DLC for Uncharted 4, and it's not really. It's like a full standalone game, and it gives you access to Uncharted 4's multiplayer, which is something that I never took any time, like I never tried it. I very much just went like blinders on single player in Uncharted 4. So Lost Legacy gives you access to that multiplayer, but then it also gives you a really long, really robust story. Like I said, I'm already a couple hours in, and you know, I'm nowhere near finishing it. But yeah, it was $50, which is the cost of Uncharted 4 right now. And granted, Uncharted 4 is a couple of years old, or I guess a year old now. But still, it's yeah, I was surprised, because I was expecting like maybe $30, and yeah. So then I went to buy it, and I was like, well, I need something new to play for the show, so I guess I'm just going to do this. But yeah, I was very much like, oh, this hurts a little when I pushed the buy button.
Yeah. And this is, so it is a standalone product now. Yeah. Something that.
Yeah. So I don't even think that you have to have Uncharted 4 in order to buy this, because it's not listed under like Uncharted 4's DLC. It's its own full standalone game.
Yeah, no, it's it was originally started as when Uncharted 4 came out, there was a season pass saying, like, hey, you'll get some multiplayer map packs, and then you'll also get the first Uncharted story bonus, where extra chapters type thing, mm-hmm. where they tell a separate story. And that evolved into this, its own, I hesitate to say, like, it is its own game, but it's not like Uncharted 5. It's
right. It's this in between.
Yeah, it is a story in the Uncharted world. You know, kind of, I don't know if they've compared it to lengths of the other Uncharted campaigns, but, you know, given the price tag, I assume it's close. So what you're looking at is they, around the end of summer last year, they said, okay, we're not going to sell the season pass anymore. You're going to be able to buy coins for multiplayer because all of our content's going to be free, which, you know, is the trend. And for all those who purchase the deluxe edition or the season pass, you get Uncharted Lost Legacy for free, which, you know, is kind of like an extra $25 off type thing. Mm-hmm. So I don't have the season pass, and it's kind of weird for me to skip this one. I am going to play it eventually. So I am curious, how are you digging the character pair up that they've given you with Nadine and Chloe?
Well, it's okay.
Okay.
It's like, I don't know. I like the main character, which I guess is Nadine. You don't actually play as Chloe unless I'm getting their names mixed up.
Chloe which is the English one.
Okay, so then maybe, I can't remember now. Anyways, you only play as one character. The other one is like a follow-along chick. And I don't know, it's like, they don't have a real good dynamic, I guess.
Okay.
They're kind of like wary of each other, but a lot of the dialogue seems really forced. It's really weird. I don't know. I don't remember it being like that in Uncharted 4, but yeah, it's like they don't 100% trust each other. They're like on the same page, but not. And then one of them is like, was asking the other about Nathan Drake and, you know, like, oh, are they going to be involved at all? And she was like, no, that chapter of my life is closed or something. And I was just kind of like, this seems just the dialogue and the subject matter is odd to me. I almost feel like it would have been better if it was just like one of them who just like talked to herself sometimes when she walked up to things and just kind of said like, hey, this looks like a bloody blah relic or so, you know, like just talking to the camera like video game characters often do, because sure. The dialogue between the two of them and even the setup of the story is just so weird. Like you start off and you are in this war zone and you have to meet up with your partner on the roof of this thing, which I think was the big reveal trailer that they showed originally, was basically the opening sequence of the game. And so it's interesting, but they don't talk about like how the two of them got together, how they started working together. They don't really talk about what their goal is or anything else. You're kind of like thrown into the story partway through, it feels like.
Okay.
Like, you know, in Uncharted 4, you had the scene with like Nathan Drake and his wife, and they're sitting there and playing video games. And then he goes into the office, and then his brother shows up, and his brother's like, hey, we got to do this thing. And it kind of like sets up where his brother's been and what's going on and, you know, how they're getting together and what the story is. You don't have any of that in Lost Legacy. It just throws you right in. It feels like it throws you in like scene two. Like you miss the beginning part of the why they're working together and what exactly it is that they're looking for. So you're kind of like going up against this warlord. So it's very like reminded me a lot of kind of like Tomb Raider.
Okay.
And even Uncharted, there's always another group that's going for the same thing, right? But it definitely has that like you're both racing for the goal sort of a storyline. So, you know, it is what it is. It's more Uncharted. It's exactly the same kind of controls and stuff, which When I say exactly the same controls, those exactly the same controls, the same as Uncharted, but they are not the same as what, like, my muscle memory is to go to, like, reload and stuff. I keep hitting the wrong button and, like, trying to hit people in the face with my gun, and I'm like, damn it.
Oh, no.
So, the buttons are a little bit different than what I would, you know, naturally, like you mentioned earlier, muscle memory. My muscle memory is definitely not set for Uncharted 4.
It's been a while.
It has been a really long time since I played that game, so...
Yeah.
So yeah, the story itself is interesting because I find that world interesting anyway. I like the Tomb Raider, the Uncharted, the, you know, relic hunting, thieving type storylines where you get these kind of like sparkles of different cultures you may not 100% be familiar with. So this one takes place in India. And so it's really interesting because it's this whole I'm going to say Hindu, but I might be wrong, but I think I'm right. But you're kind of getting like insight into those religions. And I'm familiar with a lot of the names because we play Smite, right? So there's a lot of like, at one point they were talking about like, oh yeah, and this was a gift from Kali. And I'm like, oh, I know who that is. So I feel like I'm getting some insight into these different cultures and stuff. So, good. I mean, I really enjoy that kind of like the exploration into parts of the world that are a little bit different from, you know, our current locations and things that we're familiar with. So I enjoy it a lot, but yeah, the dialogue between the two is really forced, and she could, the partner, and I'm going to look it up because I don't want to say the wrong one, but,
Chloe's
whoever the sidekick is.
Right. So Chloe's the British one. She could
just not be there and that would be fine.
Right. And then Nadine's from Uncharted 4. Chloe wasn't in Uncharted 4. She's from Uncharted 2 and a bit of 3, I think.
Wikipedia. Okay, so this is like the best podcasting ever.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, as I look stuff up.
It's kind of unfortunate.
Okay, so Chloe. Yeah, okay. So Chloe's the one that you play as, and Nadine is the mercenary one. So you play as Chloe. I like Chloe. I don't like Nadine.
Now, yeah, and this is the thing. So Lost Legacy, does it take place before, after, during Uncharted 4? Because Chloe's nowhere to be seen in Uncharted 4.
Right. I think it's after, because okay. Nadine is the one who, the head of the mercenary thing from Uncharted 4, right?
Yeah, but I don't remember what happened to Nadine in Uncharted 4. Did she just walk away?
I think so.
Yeah. Because he's crazy, because at the end, the guy's crazy. Yeah. All right. Okay. So that makes sense. I mean, this is an interesting test by Sony to see if they can continue Uncharted with, what is all intents and purposes a B team at Naughty Dog, which is fine. B teams are fine. You need B teams. And I just felt bad calling them a B team for some reason. You know, the main guys are working on Last of Us 2, but this it was supposed to be DLC, and they spin it up a little bit more to see what they can make it into. So it's interesting to see them experimenting with Uncharted without Nathan Drake. Because I think, you know, it can be easy to create other smart-ass characters with one-liners as they fall gracefully from ledges and things. So I'm glad that...
Oh, yeah, they've definitely carried on that kind of style of writing. She is very one-linery. So, like I said, I like the main character. I like the one you play as. I don't like her sidekick, so...
Yeah, I didn't like Nadine either in Uncharted 4. She just kind of felt kind of like an asshole. She was terrible. She's a bad person.
Sometimes they're at least entertaining, right?
Yeah.
These asshole characters, when they get thrown into games or movies or whatever, you can at least, like, they're kind of funny. Like, I mean, for instance, and I know I've got Game of Thrones on the brain right now, but, like, the Hound is an asshole, but he's still, like, witty and quick, and, you know, like, his comments are relevant, and, you know, the dialogue really flows, as opposed to in this one, it just feels like, almost like they're both talking to themselves. You know, like, they don't have a lot of necessarily, like, conversations and dialogue. It's just, yeah, it's odd anyways.
Weird. That is
weird.
But, yeah,
it is kind of weird. And maybe it's just me, but I feel like their dialogue was just almost like two different people wrote, like, one person wrote one character, the other person wrote one character, and they were given, like, topics of conversation without actually, like, writing back and forth. They just wrote sentences that you would say on a certain topic of conversation.
Oh, dear.
And the number of times that they've said, like, that's a story for another time, maybe over a beer when we're done all this. Like, they've probably said that about 5 times, and I'm on chapter 4. Like,
well, there's going to be plenty of beers at the end, I guess.
Mean, yeah, maybe we're just getting smashed at the end of the game. Maybe that's the point. That's when we get all the backstory, is at the end of the game over some beers. I don't know, but... So, I mean, if you liked the Uncharted gameplay, absolutely pick this up, because it's more of the same. There's, you know, like, climbing puzzles. There's, you know, the, all that Uncharted-y goodness is in there. But yeah, the character development and the dialogue is a little bit lacking. But what can you do? Like you said, it's the B team, so it is what it is.
Yeah.
And if you haven't, if you don't have Uncharted 4, then I mean, you can grab this. It's I think Uncharted 4 is better, so you probably just want to go get that instead. But I mean, this gives you access to the multiplayer, so that's a little bit where the price tag comes from as well. So
yeah, and I think the multiplayer is getting either did get or is getting some free updates. They've added a horde mode where you can co-op with 4 friends. And nice. Face off a bunch of AI. So that sounds right up my alley. Now, again, if you have Uncharted 4, you probably have access to that right now, I believe, unless I'm remembering it wrong and it's coming later. But yeah, no, I'm excited to play this, because from what I recall, Chloe in Uncharted 2 was very likable, and then her time in Uncharted 3 was also really good. There's actually a lot of characters that didn't make it into 4. That it would have been nice to see them return. So some of the characters that are connected to Chloe were the ones that didn't make it into 4. So it'll be interesting to see if those folks pop up in Lost Legacy in some capacity. So yeah, but no Nathan Drake. This is them putting their foot down. Like, Nathan Drake does not appear in this.
Yeah, she literally has a lot, because I guess it sounded like they had a romantic, because Uncharted 4 was my first Uncharted, so I didn't play the other ones previously. So they made it sound like they had some sort of a romantic something or other, and then it didn't go well, and that was one of the maybe I'll tell you another time over a beer conversations, but she said, no, there will be no Nathan Drake, like, literally came out in the game and said that. So I was like, okay, clearly there's they're laying down the law here that he has nothing to do with this. So
yeah, they had a thing in 2, and I think they had a working relationship in 3, but he chose the other lady. Can't remember her name.
The blonde girl.
Yeah, but what's her name?
I don't know. Oh. I'm terrible with names.
Oh, wait. No, I'm terrible with names. You can't take that from me. What's her name? It's Nathan and... Oh, that's terrible. I'm going to remember her name.
Elena?
There it is. Thank you. So you remembered.
I Googled it.
All right. We're both still terrible with names.
Yep. That's my experience in Uncharted Lost Legacy so far. Cool. Hopefully I'll have a little bit more, maybe not next week, because like I mentioned, we're going to go over what all happened and got announced at Gamescom. But maybe the week after we'll get final thoughts on Lost Legacy. But you have some first thoughts on Sonic Mania. So this is a Switch title, so worth picking up or no? Because I'm still looking for more things to play on my Switch, although Splatoon, I'm still into the competitive multiplayer is super fun.
I've been poking back into Splatoon 2. I need to get in there. I know they're settling the age old debate of superpowers, invisibility or flight next weekend. But no, I picked up Sonic Mania on the Switch. It's a game that is available on PS4 and Xbox One and Steam. But I feel like an old school game like that, I don't know. I also wanted something to play on my Switch that would feel very, very good, portable, quick, pick up and play, shutter down when you're ready to start. I don't know. The gamer's in, for that matter. Sonic Mania came out about a couple weeks ago. I picked it up on the Switch. It's about $25 Canadian, so it's about 20 US. I think it comes to Steam at the end of the month. But I don't know. If you ever played any of the Sonic games, if you were a Genesis person and you know, that was your jam and you played all the Sonic games, this is that done really well and brought up into the modern age. If you didn't like Sonic before, this isn't going to change that. It's still that motif and sound and stage layout, but they've finally sort of taken the old Sonic and paired it with just modern sensibilities, jammed them together, and they created a really cool, basically, Sonic 4, you know? Even Sega couldn't do that properly. This is actually Christian Whitehead, I think is his name. Anyways, he did a bunch of ports. He did fan games of the old Sega Genesis games, and then Sega hired him to create his own Sonic game, which is Sonic Mania, and it plays probably better than any of the 2D Sega games that they made. It's kind of crazy. So I've just been really, really enjoying it. It felt like it was a remake at first, because some of the they take the old levels and kind of replaster them a bit with some new twists. But then after you get through the first zone, which feels very familiar, they introduce the second zone, which feels very different. Almost like they took the first zone as a remake, and then the second zone is like, okay, now this is our take on this world, and feels very fresh. So yeah, I'm really, really digging Sonic Mania. It's really good in bite-sized chunks to jump in, play a couple levels, and then jump out.
Have you been playing in like handheld mode on your Switch, or are you playing on the TV?
Majority on handheld mode, which feels very cool.
It kind I was going to say, so how does that hold up? Because I feel like, I mean, I'm trying to remember the Sonic that because I know I played Sonic, and I can't remember if it was TV or handheld, but I feel like it would be a really good, really fun handheld title.
It was, I played a majority of my Sonic the Hedgehog on television on the Genesis. Mm-hmm. My cousin had a Genesis, and whenever we'd go to his place, we would leave the Super Nintendo at home, and we would try, you know, the Forbidden Fruit, which was Genesis, you know, like, you know, jamming a...
You cheated on Nintendo?
I left, Ryan. They wouldn't know until now. But Nintendo doesn't have the internet, so it's fine. And I would always play Sonic. I think the one of the handheld Sonic games that Sega had made was on the Game Gear, which was a mess. I never touched one of those, so the Game Boy is safe at least. But with this handheld mode, feels very good. It's a very easy game to play on screen. Looks very good on your Switch, but I played a little bit on the TV today as well, and yeah, feels just as great. Honestly, it's good in handheld, and it's good on television as well. There's not a whole lot you can say about it besides, like, if you played any of the Sonic games from your youth and you're looking to recapture that, this is the perfect balance between nostalgia and a new Sonic game. And you know, I don't necessarily think there's a reason to pick it up on one platform over the other, but the Switch has this thing going for it where you can play it anywhere, you know, mm-hmm. On your television or out and about. And this is one of those games that plays well handheld, because you can just do a couple of rounds and then pop out, you know, like it serves that purpose really well. Unlike a lot of Switch games that feel very, you know, big, like Zelda is big.
That was always my problem, right? Is mm-hmm. that, like Zelda specifically, I tried to do one of the Divine Beasts on handheld, and man, it was impossible. Just your field of view and everything was too small, and I just really didn't like it. And then, like Splatoon, like I said, I've been playing the competitive multiplayer. I wouldn't want to do that on my handheld, you know? Like, when I'm playing competitive games, I want, like, as big a screen as possible, so...
Yeah.
It's nice, like, 'cause I feel like that's the thing I'm missing, is a really good handheld title. So I might actually give this one a try and see what I think, because for $25 Canadian, it's kind of hard to go wrong. And you do, I think, need more titles on Switch right now.
Yeah. And it's a very good Switch title. The only bug that I've encountered is there's a bit of a hiccup when you hit the home button or the power button. The game lags a little bit, and then it'll initiate, like, either the home screen or shutting off or putting the mm-hmm. Switch to sleep. It's not a deal breaker. It's just one of those things that people have noted. But other than that, I've experienced no slowdown. Game runs great. I ran into the classic Sonic drowning mode, and it's just like, oh god, I hate this. I hated this 20 years ago, and I hate it now. It's the worst feeling in the world when Sonic is drowning. But you just feel for the little guy. I'm really digging it. I honestly can't recommend it more, because like you said, it's just a bite-sized price point, and it's very easy to pick up on any of these platforms. So go check it out.
Awesome. I wanted to take a second here to remind everyone to go to patreon.com/thegamersin if you like the show and you'd like to support us. We'd like to thank a new patron this week, Nico. Thank you so much for the support. We really appreciate it. It helps bring all kinds of cool content to you guys. We have some neat goals up there, so if you want to go check it out, again, that's patreon.com/thegamersin. We have our Gamers In Game Night once a month on the third Thursday, so that was last week. Our next one will be the 21st of September, so make sure you guys are all patroned up if you want to come and join us for whatever you want. We play whatever you guys want, and we stream it live, so make sure you guys come and join us. We also have a patron ad this week from The Geek Review. The Geek Review is a podcast that reviews everything and anything for an honest consumer review. The Geek Review can be found on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Discord, and at thegeekreview.podbean.com. That brings us to our topic of the week this week, which is we are basically doing news, odds, and ends. So first of all, we are going to talk about the Super Nintendo Entertainment System's classic pre-order, which worked out for one of us and not the other.
I feel so bad.
You should.
Hey, that's not the tact you take when someone says they feel bad. You're supposed to say, oh, don't worry about it. It's fine.
No, you should feel bad. Okay. Actually, Ryan, you shouldn't feel bad. Nintendo should feel bad because I have had it up to here with their freaking short supply bullshit.
Yeah, and I know a lot of folks, so first of all, story, I was able to pre-order one. Both Jocelyn and I texted her. It's like, hey, Best Buy, and this is the Canadian side of things. The American side, I think, had it even worse. No one announced when they were doing pre-orders. They just went up, they were gone, and everybody started
in
to post.
Minutes, like,
yeah,
on minutes. Both sides of the border, because yeah, that's what happened to us. Like, Ryan got his, and I had my finger on the button, and they were sold out by the time my order processed. So,
yeah. And
ridiculous.
It's crazy, you know, that I remember a month ago when Nintendo posted pre-orders would go live and near the end of August, we'd have plenty of stock, there'll be more stock in stores, and
we fell for it suckers we are.
We were pretty naive, and I kind of figured, like, you know, a couple minutes for these things to last is proof in the pudding that you just didn't put enough pre-orders up. You know?
The only thing that I can think, and Ryan and I talked about this a little bit yesterday, but the only thing that I can think is that their promise that there will be more on launch means that there are going to be more, like, in the brick and mortar stores. I don't know what that means for things like Amazon, but at least for things like Best Buy, as opposed to, you know, everything being locked down for pre-orders, they've got a set number of pre-orders that was very, very small. And basically, they're going back to the everybody line up outside the door and, you know, first 15 people get a classic and everybody else doesn't. You know, like, that's the only thing I can think, is that their promise to have more in stores on launch was, like, actual brick and mortar inventory as opposed to pre-orders. But
yeah,
one way or another, it's still stupid and sucks because we won't have any kind of verification of that until literally launch day.
Yeah, which is a month from now. And the thing is, when we look at that theory, which is our theory, and I'm sure a lot of other folks are coming up with that one as well, you look at
it's the only way Nintendo can actually keep their promise, right? Like, that's the only way, because their pre-orders sold out within minutes. So clearly that was just a total lie that they were going to have more if they were talking about pre-orders. So the only way that they didn't just flat out lie to us is if there's going to be more in brick and mortar stores.
And again, like, I'm getting deja vu from last year, where we talked about the NES Mini, and I was like, this was an item meant to just have stacks at an electronics store, EB Games, Walmart, Best Buy, where you could walk in and say, hey, my, you know, nephew or my brother would love one of these, my sister, my, you know, my cousins, we need to get one of these, put them under the tree, boom, Christmas is saved. We've done it. We wrap this thing in a nice, neat bow. I can go home. And the fact that never happened was just, you felt like Nintendo, again, is just leaving money on the table. And I realize that they have to manufacture these things, and that takes time and money. But if you look at the way I assume building a product works, is that when you make one, you sell it for a little bit more than it costs to make, therefore you're making a profit. So they should theoretically be able to make as many as they can to sell as many as they can. And clearly they're not meeting demand with the pre-orders.
Which they should know what demand is going to look like, because I think that the Super Nintendo is going to be even more in demand than the original Nintendo, because, I mean, and again, Ryan and I were discussing this yesterday, but I feel like Super Nintendo was the first system that I owned, and I'm in my early 30s. So I'm kind of thinking that that's going to be the same story for most people around my age, late 20s, early to mid 30s. Like, this was their first console. I had friends who, and I can remember like going over to their houses when I was like 5 and 6 and playing on the original Nintendo. But the first thing that I sunk hours and hours and hours of time into was my Super Nintendo. And so the nostalgia factor for people who are, you know, in their late 20s, in their early 30s, lots of disposable income, like, this is like the dream demographic, right? So that's the all the people that are going to have the most nostalgia for it and time to play it and all the rest of it. Like, I feel like this is the one that they should have thought, like, okay, the demand for this is going to be even more than the first one. And we dropped the ball there. So let's, you know, even if they quadrupled production, they would probably still have sold out within the first week.
Well, it doesn't appear as if they've even matched what they put out with the NES Mini last year. You know, these pre-orders went, and again, you could chalk this up to the fact that people were aware that this was going to be a hot item and then just a bunch of people pre-ordering it. But I really do think that Nintendo didn't allocate enough for pre-orders because they just went so quickly. Maybe there'll be a second round, but we're looking at a month away from launch. Yeah. And I think our only options here in Canada left over, they've already announced that Walmart and Toys R Us are only doing in-store. And maybe because Amazon hasn't put theirs up yet, that solidifies your theory that they're saving a lot for brick and mortar. And Amazon is just trying to determine how many they're going to have from now until the launch date so that they can have the most accurate pre-order window as possible. Because if I look back at what happened in the States with Amazon, they put them up at like 10 p.m. Pacific, and they sold out in just under an hour. So maybe that goes to show that the online-only stores will have a good selection of them, and they will last a reasonable time. Now, mind you, I've been keeping an eye on, you know, Reddit and Amazon to see when it's going to go live, and then quickly send a text to Jocelyn and you know, try to pick up, you know, an extra one for my brother, who is also not very web savvy. You know, there's a lot of folks out there who want these things, and I just don't get why Nintendo's making themselves look bad. And it has nothing to do with, you know, competing with themselves, because the virtual console does not exist. That service has not been around in the first 6 months of the Switch's launch cycle. So, like, there's no reason for them to hold back on this. And also, it doesn't cost them as much to produce, you know, virtual console titles, and they can sell those piecemeal for a large amount of money digitally. So there's no infrastructure or manufacturing there. It's just coding, which is some work and it costs money, but still, like, they sell those things for almost $10 a pop. So I like, Nintendo shouldn't even be worried about competing with themselves. And this isn't even getting into the whole fact that the Super NES Classic's not going to be available in Quebec, which is, you know, the largest province we have here in Canada. So, and that's causing some feathers to be ruffled as well. So people are just very unhappy with Nintendo on this. And I think a lot of people got their hopes up when Nintendo posted that one comment on their Facebook page. And now we're seeing what is actually happening. And I do actually feel bad that I got a pre-order. I'm happy that I did, but it's unfortunate that once again I'm gonna have to go through, I'm getting this sense like, oh god, I really want everybody who wants one to get one, because I know what,
which is what Nintendo should want too, right?
Yeah, like, and it's a shitty feeling to have them. I really don't understand why Nintendo is making not even their fans. Like, we're not even talking about hardcore fans. We're even just talking about people who want one of these because they liked Nintendo when they were kids. Mm. They might be PC only or Xbox or PlayStation only. They don't even think about owning a Switch to play Mario games. They just want to play the games that they grew up with. And Nintendo isn't even giving them that option. I hope that in a month's time, this conversation will be like, boy, I'm glad we were on the wrong side of this one, and I'm glad we were wrong, but I just don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah.
So.
So speaking of Nintendo, something else, another conversation, except I think Ryan and I actually agree this time, but Mario and Rabbids is going to have a season's pass. Mm. So this is a little bit of news out of Gamescom where we're kind of, you know.
I wanted this one.
Ryan wanted this one.
Because this game is coming out next week and I'm kind of stoked.
Yeah.
yeah. So there's DLC coming for it. Very but much it has in a line with.
Pass.
Yes, it's a season pass. It's very much in line with what they did with Zelda, where they announced the season pass ahead of release and kind of outlined what you would get with two packs and one pack at launch. The one pack at launch being just like, ooh, some weapons. Great.
But it's the same as Zelda, right? Where you have to buy all or nothing. Like, you can't just buy the pieces that you want.
I don't know. I didn't see that. But I could be wrong. I just saw that there was a season pass, and usually with Ubisoft they will allow you to purchase DLC piecemeal. But I don't know. I could be wrong. This might be a Nintendo thing. But yeah, season pass $19.99 for this is US for technically three pieces of DLC. But again, like there's really just two big chunks.
Yeah. So it's Steampunk weapons on launch with their own stats, so they will be slightly different, I guess, than what you get with your normal base game. And then solo challenges and additional maps for co-op are coming in the fall, and then in 2018 there's going to be new story content, so that's what you're going to get. But it doesn't... I thought I had heard that it was the same, that you couldn't buy them individually, but I could be wrong.
That's my big problem.
Is that I have to buy some crap to get the thing that I would probably want would be new story content. So I have to pay $20 for new story content, and that is stupid.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, that's where you get lucky. Like, I've purchased seasons passes in the past with Fallout 4, where they presented you what started as a $40 package. And then was quickly expanded into $60, but a third, if not half, of that content was the shelter building stuff, which I just was not my cup of tea. So that was an instance where I was on your side of like saying, "Oh, I'm paying for content I'm never going to touch." The same thing was with Skyrim, but mind you, yeah, you could buy that all piecemeal if you really wanted to. It was more expensive that way, but still, you had that option if there was only like 25% of the DLC you wanted to play. So with this, I look at this announcement, not even knowing if you're going to be able to buy it piecemeal. I don't know anything about this game. I have not played it. It's not a proven franchise, not a proven setup, not proven gameplay. It is XCOM, but with Mario and Rabbids, so I am excited about that, but I'm not ready to get on board with the season pass right now.
Well, it's an XCOM style game, but there's nothing saying that it's going to be as robust as XCOM, or, you know, like you said, it's not a proven franchise. This could be anything. So this could be like, you could play the first level and go, well, this is crap and stupid and boring or whatever. Like, it looks cool, but you haven't actually played it yet. So, I agree. Like, Zelda is one thing because it's a proven franchise, and like, as much as I hate the bundled season pass is the only way to get DLC, and I just don't generally like the idea of DLC anyways, but it just, like, there's no reason to put your money into a season's pass for this game already. Like, it's crazy that they're asking for it.
And it was the same thing with Zelda. Like, I didn't buy the season pass until the first piece of content was out, which was pack one, not the three chests that you got. Now, when I did get the season pass and those chests popped up, I was like, okay, what was I getting if I had bought this right away? And it was like, It was chump change. Nothing really that interesting. A t-shirt with the Switch logo on it, which completely broke canon, like just, you know, completely threw you out of the whole game. Like you're walking around with a freaking logo on your shirt.
Yeah.
And with this, I think it's just one of those things where when the first pack comes out, I'll look at it, and by then I'll have played enough of the game to know whether I like the setup or not, and then I'll make that call. But yeah, just when season passes are announced before the game comes out, I really don't understand the marketing around that. I know a lot of people are talking about your game, and you know you want to kind of slide something under the door while everybody's paying attention. But I think there's a time. There's got to be a better time. I don't know what it is.
Well, and I feel like if your content is good enough, it should speak for itself, right?
Sure.
Like you shouldn't try to slide anything by anyone. Like if you're making good content and people want to pay you for it, and because people are enjoying your gameplay, then that's when you bring out DLC. You say, hey, guess what? You know, a month from now is our first DLC for this game that came out 6 months ago, and this is what it's going to be. And then everyone gets excited, as opposed to like, are they expecting that people aren't going to be talking about their game come fall? Like, fall's not that far away.
No.
So, I don't know. It just, yeah. The way that Nintendo has been doing DLC is just really rubs me the wrong way. So,
like, besides having
the purchase... But I'm not even planning on picking up Mario and Rabbids, so yeah. I know you're really excited about it, but...
I am. But I do need to say, though, that, like, besides the fact that they're making you buy the season pass and no individual content, they're doing DLC the same way every other company is doing it. It's the state of the market right now. But yeah, besides the fact of you buying everything and having no option.
Well, and see, that's my problem. That's what I mean by the way Nintendo does DLC.
Yeah.
Is that, yeah, I don't like that you either buy the bundle and get everything or you don't. Because like, especially where their DLC is... each piece is markedly different. Like first is usually like cosmetic type things, and then there's some co-op-y stuff, and then there's some single player stuff. Then, you know, when those are the bundles, then, you know, they are for very specific type of gameplays and gamers. Like some people just like the transmog type stuff. Some people like to have fun with their friends, so they want the co-op stuff, and some people like to have fun on their own and are very interested in the single player story. Those are three different gamers for the most part, unless it's your favorite game of all time and it's the only thing you play and you play every single part of it, then yay, this full bundled season pass is for you. But otherwise, you probably don't care about a different t-shirt or a steampunk gun. You might only want the single player story, or you might only want to play with your friends. But one way or another, you're being forced to buy the whole thing, and that's what I don't agree with.
It's a small, especially with these larger games like Zelda or larger is the wrong word, but maybe more varied games like Zelda or Mario plus Rabbids, where when you offer DLC, you hit a wide spectrum of the game. You spread it across all the modes. But if you look at Mario Kart, where they did the same thing, you had to buy both packs. I believe you had to. I could be wrong. Maybe you could buy them individually, but either way, you were getting a specific part of that game, which was the single player tracks and characters. But that was a straight shot down the middle of, like, you knew if you were a fan of Mario Kart, you were going to love that DLC because it was for you. But I agree with you here, where you look at this DLC and, like, I'm probably not going to be interested in co-op, so there's already a third there that I'm not going to be playing. You know, challenge modes, we have to see whether the gameplay is that enticing. It looks cool, but I need to play it first. Single player DLC, yeah, I'm always up for more single player content. So, yeah, I mean, this is one of those things where we have to sit and wait and see how it shakes out. But it's not, it's weird that it's news talking about a season pass, but it is when it's Nintendo, right? Because they just don't do it very often, and maybe we're getting to the point where it's got to stop being news, I guess.
All right, I think that's pretty much going to do it for us tonight. Before we go, I just wanted to remind everyone we have a patron ad from Simon this week, who says Geekly News Desk is a podcast all about the geek news this week. Join your two knucklehead hosts, Andrew and Simon, as they keep you informed on movies, TV, video games, and books. Find them on iTunes or at geeklynews.com. You can visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com. You can also find us on AMOVE TV, along with other fabulous podcasts, including The Angry Nerd, Into the Nexus, The Angry Chicken, For Azeroth, Embrace the Spoilers, and Heroes Forge. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at JossPlays. Ryan is at RMurphy, and don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found at youtube.com/amovetv. If you'd like to email the show and let us know what you think about DLC, we talked about a lot of different kinds of DLC on tonight's episode, please do so at info@gamersinpodcast.com. Thanks for staying at The Gamers Inn. Remember, tune in next week. Bye, guys.
Hi, everybody.